Hello, and welcome to Your Creative and Magical Life, which is hopefully your real life, but is also this podcast, a show that explores the intersections of tarot, creativity, magic, anti-capitalism, nature worship, social justice, and all sorts of metaphysical and real life stuff, all with the goal of helping you cultivate a life that sparkles with magic and creativity. I'm your host, Cecily Saylor. Let's make some magic. Hello, creative spirits. Welcome to episode 9 of Your Creative and Magical Life. In this episode, we're exploring the Lover's card, card number 6 in the major arcana. This is the card of intimacy. I think it's probably one of the most recognized cards in the tarot deck. And most traditional decks will show us a depiction of something that looks very much like the Adam and Eve story, this blessed union between male and female, this sacred romance that will bring forward many stories, many dramas, much abundance, and much strife. But this card on a deeper level is really about how we generate love within the self. So when you get this card, you know, maybe we want to read it like, oh, new love is coming, new romance is on the horizon. And perhaps that will turn out to be true. But we also live in a culture that really emphasizes that kind of narrative, especially for women to be always on the lookout for the partner who will satisfy all of the things that seem to be missing in our own lives. And buying into this narrative is problematic. We can't really help it, some of us. I know I couldn't. It didn't help that the first book that I learned to read was a Disney children's book of Cinderella, which is a whole fairy tale kind of centered around the Lover's card and one depiction of what that can look like, where you're sort of chosen and then your life changes from suffering to perfection, right? That's not really how it works. Relationships are challenging and we have to show up with love for ourselves and for the other. And in order to really have healthy relationships, we have to be able to practice intimacy, which is this ability to reveal the self to another and to witness another in revealing themselves to us. And that takes a lot of love for our own being. And like many things that we want to have in life, you know, like freedom, I say, starts at home. Like we can go out and fight for freedom, but we also have to always be looking for the ways in which we're also ourselves confined and trapped and placed in cages that society invented for us that we've internalized. So when we get free of those, we can be better agents for liberation out in the world. And the same is true with love and intimacy. The more we practice love at home, and in this case, I mean, inside the self, the more we practice loving ourselves and loving ourselves so much that we're safe enough to reveal ourselves to other people, the more we can experience this beautiful thing that is intimacy and connection. So that's what this card is about. And I'm really excited to be in conversation for this episode with Bianca Perez, who is a poet and a writer, and also someone who coordinates programs for writers at one of the local universities here in the Austin area. And I've gotten to know Bianca from seeing her read at a number of different events around town. And she has a beautiful chapbook called Gemini Gospel. And Gemini is the card associated with the Lovers. We haven't talked much about the astrology associated with all of the different major arcana cards, but each one does have a zodiac sign associated with it. And for the Lovers, it's Gemini, which makes sense because the Gemini is this twinship, right? There were Castor and Pollux in the myth, and they're really individuals who are very much connected. And we see that in the Lover's card. And I think something we're always maybe hungering for on a deep level is to feel this mirroring or identification with someone else. We all feel so different and unique. Is there anyone out there who can connect with us on all these levels where we feel like we're known and understood, that there's someone out there like us? So Gemini is a suitable sign for this card. Bianca is a Gemini. She's named her book Gemini Gospel, and her poems are filled with love and sometimes anger and myth and grief, which is a form of love. So this is just a really beautiful conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. I hope it enriches you and supports you. Let's get into it. Hello, Bianca. Welcome to the show. I am so excited that you're here. And I was wondering if we could just start off, will you tell us about you? Tell us about you and your creative and magical life. It's a big question, but just like, what do you want us to know first off?
Yes. Hi, Cecily. First of all, thank you so much for asking me to come on to this podcast. I'm so excited. So I guess to start off, I'm a poet, a person from South Texas. And, you know, we'll get into probably like how that relates to my writing. I am a Gemini. I hate making choices. Right now, my food obsession is oatmeal. I love X-Files. And all of that is very relevant to my poetry because it is all me, and therefore I write about it, or it informs my writing in some way. But yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm here living in Seguin now with my husband, which we will talk about too. I'm so excited. And yeah, I'm you know, trying to do poetry full time while also being a human full time, while also working within Texas State's MFA program. So
yeah, thank you for sharing that range of things about you. I also love the X-Files and oatmeal. Your poetry. I just, you know, you're another one of us trying to like work and survive and live and make your art
and be creative.
And you, every time I see you out in the world, you seem to have a really beautiful energy around all of that. So I definitely wanted you to come on the show and share what you know, share what you've learned, share how you're making it work. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to get into this. And the card that we'll be exploring today, while we also explore your wisdom and insight, is the Lovers. And I like to just give our listeners, I like to like set it up with the card and kind of talk about the visual of the card. I'm sure most people listening have seen it, but I have a few different versions that I want to show you and, you know, hear what you notice and what you see happening, or what, you know, what comes up for you when you look at it. So this one is from the Aquarius Tarot. I don't know if you can see that. The Aquarius Tarot is like, I think from like the 70s, the 60s, very kind of Art Nouveau.
Yes, exactly. That's what I would have said for that. Okay. That's beautiful. So many colors. But I'm noticing that the kind of more masculine figure is centered on the card, whereas like kind of off to the side is the more like feminine figure. That's like the first thing I noticed.
Yeah, that's a good point. And he, or this masculine figure, they're facing one another, kind of doing the lover's gaze. There's some kind of bird suggestions. Like he's got like what looks like some peacock vibes coming off of his cap.
Yes. And then kind of those like lavender almost looking plants in the background as well. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a lively card, I would say.
Yeah. And so it gives us just kind of, I guess, like a traditional sort of depiction of what appears to be like a heterosexual relationship and two people in very close proximity, sort of showing us intimacy, I suppose, like through their physical closeness and also the way they seem to be interacting with each other. Mm-hmm. And in like the Smith Rider weight card, we see kind of a similar dynamic. You'll see the figures, they're more centered in the card and a bit more like they have equal space they take up on like this card where the gentleman seems to be the focal point. Yeah. So they'll be like side by side, maybe holding hands, very Adam and Eve kind of vibes. There's a tree there. There's an angel that's kind of coming down and seeming to bless their relationship. So that one has a very like biblical kind of reference point. I don't have that deck right now. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't, we're talking about it, but it's not here. And then I have two other cards and these kind of take us in another direction. So this next one's from the Fifth Spirit Tarot.
Oh, I've seen this. Yep. I've seen this one. Right. So this is, I would say, like more of a depiction of self-love because it's a character, a person marrying or being married by another figure, like almost in starlight. And it looks, it's a reflection. It looks exactly like them, except they're just kind of more shaded in and more like stars. And then, yeah, we get that Adam and Eve reference, I suppose, with the apples. Yeah, this one's beautiful. I love this deck.
Yeah, this is a great deck. Very gender diverse, gender inclusive.
Right.
And I'll just point out that the two versions, like the physical in the flesh human and the like cosmic human, are facing one another. So that's like a key dynamic in this card, is like, you know, turned toward the other, like body,
right.
Body language is like one of loving, and they're connecting there. It's like their palms are touching. Like they're maybe going to do that like mime exercise where it's like, pretend there's a mirror and do exactly what your partner does. So there's that one. And then this one is not unlike that one, but a little bit different. This one is the Next World Tarot.
I love this one. Again, very inclusive when it comes to disability and like body shape. I love that there's, you know, the same kind of dynamic with the characters kind of facing each other. There's an intimacy there, but it's the same character. The person is just coming out from the mirror, right? That's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. And there's one, so this like twinning of the self that kind of happens. There's one of the figures is like fully dressed and like wearing, you know, we see the tattoos and we see like the lace-up boots and like glasses. And then the figure that's coming out of the mirror, the second self, is reaching toward the one who's dressed. And the one coming out of the mirror is naked. So one is kind of like...
That's important, yeah.
Yeah, like the one that goes out in the world. And the other one is kind of like maybe the true self or something. And we'll see, there's nudity as well in the Smith Rider weight deck, kind of bringing up the Adam and Eve vibe, you know, like the Garden of Eden, everything was like just created and they're still like, do we need clothes or like what? And, but then the nudity too, of course, is like self-revelation when we see it in these other cards. So like when you see a card like this, and maybe we'll get into your relationship with tarot, but it sounds like you're kind of newer to the journey, even though I think you're very saturated or maybe like familiar with kind of like the landscape of the mystical, let's say. But yeah, what comes up for you with this card? What do you feel like you know about it? What do you think it means to you?
Yeah, I'm so glad that, that my like kind of mysticism oozes out of me, even though like I do consider myself more of like a baby in that regard. Because mysticism and like the metaphysical world is something that has interested me since I was very, very little. And so so the tarot, I'm kind of more new into, you know, I think when I like maybe like when I was 25 is when I was like, I want a deck 100%. But for some reason, I've been like waiting for the right one. And I've been like very picky, I think, with ones that I like pick up, but then I get like really, like I start overthinking it and then I put it back down. So I do have a tarot deck that my husband got me It's a Guillermo del Toro themed. And so it's very, very like grotesque and visceral. It's beautiful, but it scares the shit out of me. And I have yet to like, I look through it every now and then, but I haven't pulled a card out, you know, with any sort of intention behind it. So there's that. But I'm very excited. I did order a tarot deck. It should be arriving this week. So I'm super, super excited for that. But yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to the metaphysical and that sort of realm of mind, I just am so drawn to it. And especially whenever I have known that the Lover's card is associated with the Gemini for the purpose of researching for this episode with you. I'm just so glad that it kind of gave me an incentive to do that research. And so, yeah, I saw something about how earlier depictions, it was the Lover as in like a singular sort of character, which is really interesting that then it kind of turned into this more depiction of duality, which I am drawn to, of course, being that of a Gemini. And yeah, I am kind of more drawn to less of the dynamics between like a masculine feminine figure. I'm more drawn to like the artwork that Lover cards have that is more of like the self and the self. That kind of draws me a little bit more because I feel like the relationship to self and being that of a lover is really, really interesting to me. And I want to say too, I feel like this is like fate because I was at work and I was getting into the elevator and the student comes out and they were wearing a shirt that had the Lover's card, like the tarot version of it. And I was like, oh my God, this is a sign. Like out of all the tarot cards to come up, like someone was wearing that and they like happened to take that elevator. I don't know. I'm like, that's a sign 100%.
Oh yeah. Was that today?
That was today.
Amazing.
Was that work today? Yeah, I know. I was like, I have to tell Cecily, I'm so excited.
I love that. This episode is blessed. we can surmise. Yeah. And just for the record, I don't make anyone do research. You're just a Gemini, right, who loves to learn things.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. So I think this, you know, the Lovers can just be like on face value, or if, you know, it's one of those cards that like everyone has probably seen. Even if you haven't worked with tarot, like you've seen it in a movie or you've seen it in a TV show or something like that, or you've seen it on a t-shirt in the elevator. And, you know, the first thought is like romance and falling in love and all of that. Like, oh yeah, if you pull this card when you're like looking to get married, like it's going to happen for you. And right, like as a tarot reader, I will say that if people are specifically asking about romantic things and the Lover comes up, that does seem like a good sign, but there's more nuance to it than just like, oh yeah, you're right, set, you got that husband that you're looking for, don't worry, it's not just right, that. And one thing I like to explore around this card is the idea of intimacy as like, what is that, and like how do we create it, how does it happen? Mm-hmm. And we kind of start to see that demonstrated, I think, in some of these cards that actually show the self with the self.
Right.
Like intimacy is self-revelation. Like you can't right, really be intimate when you're like performing a persona that isn't really you, or when you're, you know, when you go on a first date, like unless you've really been doing some of the work of the Lovers and like self-acceptance, you're right, probably presenting a little bit of like a persona that you're not in all of the time. But the Lovers and intimacy is really about like the self as you are revealing yourself to another, being witnessed in that, and then also performing the opposite for someone else. And I think that intimacy piece will probably be something we come back to. But then the other layer, or another layer, is that relationship with the self and kind of seeing the self honestly, accepting the self fully or more fully, and like loving who you are and being willing to like explore and learn about yourself and accept yourself in all of these different ways. And I feel like as for people who are socialized female or identify as women, that self-love, self-acceptance project is definitely a project. And that's not to say, I actually think many men kind of experience this as well. There's not a great culture of masculinity here for all the guys either. But I wonder, you know, there's so much in your poetry, and I'm going to have you share a poem pretty soon, but will you talk a little bit, maybe it's too early in the podcast to do this, but I'm just curious about your own journey of like self-love and maybe like a way in which you feel like you've kind of had this meeting with yourself of acceptance and deep love for who you are.
Yes. I love that we're getting to this conversation sooner in the episode than later, because I think it'll just open us up for the rest of the episode. But yeah, I mean, I am definitely on a self-love journey. I have a lot to go, I think, and it's something that I see a therapist bi-weekly, and that's on the list of one of my goals, one of the things that I'm constantly working on. It's been 3 years now that I've been seeing my therapist, and it's been 3 years now that I've taken a more active role in kind of putting focus towards my self-confidence and growing my self-confidence. I want to be the embodiment of the lover's card for sure. I want to like look at myself in the mirror and love what I see. And you know, I think some days are harder than others, but I do have a better relationship with myself. And it's really important. I think that especially when I was writing Gemini Gospel, my first chapbook, I was thinking about this very often, because I was thinking about what it means to be a Gemini and how I kind of feel being a Gemini. And sometimes it scares me, like how mean I am to myself and how I can be I can even be mean to others. Of course, I never voiced it, but it's in my head. And that, like, I mean, I feel like everyone can relate to that, where you're just kind of surprised in the thoughts that you have. I feel like I'm just more sensitive to it. And so then I'm like, God, Bianca, like, calm the fuck down, you know? And so all that to say is that I'm kind of learning how to just take on a more self-love role so that, you know, I can kind of be a better person. But it's also important to me that I acknowledge the more darker side of myself that can be mean and impatient and, you know, angry and, you know, all these kind of like negative, quote unquote, emotions. I wanna like share space for those things, which is why I think like the duality, the dark and the light, those both need to be explored and acknowledged in a human being so that then you're complete, right? You can't just be all light or all dark. Like, there's more nuance there.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations on your journey. Like, it's hard work. And 3 years really is a strong commitment. And yeah, I think what you're saying is so important, that we, like, it's not just about loving the parts of ourselves that are easy to love. It's like, it's interesting that these cards, or this one in particular, has a mirror, and this other one kind of suggests a mirror between the two selves. And the mirror is about really seeing and like looking at who you are, or how like this one representation of yourself. And I've certainly had times in my life where I really literally could not look in the mirror. Like, I didn't want to. It was too hard. I avoided it constantly. Or if I did, like, everything I would come up in my brain after that was not very nice. But there's that like fear of what will you see when you really look in the mirror. And yeah, we do have these like parts of ourselves that maybe aren't very nice, or we all have an ego, right? And like, just creating space for that, like, that's part of the self-acceptance too, so much. That's the hard work of it. And I think I skipped I have a little outline for us, but I thought the poem was like coming up, but it was supposed to happen before this. So, or not, it was supposed to happen right now. But let's go to the first poem in Gemini Gospel, if you don't mind. I feel like this poem is very demonstrative of self-love and celebration. So I'd love to hear you read it.
Yes, thank you. So this poem is called Fetish Women Have Always Been Beautiful. Fetish women have always been beautiful in their act of taking apart something to make a new thing, a shedding my skin feasts on. I see my face in the tearing of a soft tortilla. It's all about amor here. Roll the tortilla up con amor, drown the tortilla in oil con amor, flip it over con amor. Today, my flautas do not burn. Today, I'm reminded that I'm my grandmother's flesh. Hot oil pops onto my thumb and I don't wince. This is the way to loving my body, to breathing the burns on my fingers, my wrists, my palms. Each burn, a time I cooked a meal for myself. Sat down at the dinner table with myself. Passed the salt to myself. Blessed my food the same way my grandmother did.
So good. Such a beautiful way to open the collection too.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I notice, or it's occurring to me now, that there's this like a little bit of like pain in the love, like the burning of the oil, but that represents like every time you sat down with yourself. And I wonder, I don't know, like, I'm sure it's annoying. I'm not trying to like dissect your own poem and tell us what it means, but maybe
please do.
Okay.
Rip it to shreds, please.
Oh, no. I don't like, not like that.
No, the best way possible.
But like, I'm maybe thinking about you in those moments, like cooking for yourself in real life. Like, how is that a very prominent way you feel like self-connection?
Yes, 100%. I think because, I have such a weird relationship with food because, again, it kind of ties back to like the relationship I have with my body. So this is kind of my way of bringing back this idea that food is nourishing and food is tied to family, because so often I focus too much on how like eating certain kinds of foods will, like, I'll start thinking, you know, about my weight too often. And then I forget that like the food is delicious, you know, that sort of thing. So yeah, food is definitely something, again, that I have a really nuanced relationship with, but it's one that I feel connects me with like my grandma and my mom and my dad. I also like within the collection, I talk about like how my dad made me like a strawberry egg sandwich kind of thing, a strawberry jam. And like those memories of my like family making food for me is just so prominent. So I was just thinking like, what would it be like to make food for myself? And what, like, how can I reflect that same relationship with myself?
Yeah, it's really potent. It feels very alive inside that poem. And like you want to smell the oil and smell the flautas. And I love those final lines, like, I pass the salt to myself and I do this for me. And just the repetition feels very devotional to the self. It's just beautiful.
Yes, thank you.
So the title of the book, as we've noted, is Gemini Gospel, and you have noted you're a Gemini, and we have also noted that Gemini, so, you know, many of the major arcana cards are connected to a zodiac sign, and the lovers and Gemini are connected, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't know all of the underlying reasons for that choice, but it makes a lot of sense just in, like, Gemini are the twins. They're, you know, the myth of Castor and Pollux are these brothers who are like very, very close, and one of them dies on the battlefield, and the only way they can be reunited, or that, you know, one of them goes to like the deity who's the father, I can't remember which god is their father, and like begs them to, I think it's like a petition to become immortal or to, you know, revive the other brother, but sacrifice the self, something like that. I can't remember. My apologies to everyone listening, but the deity father is like, okay, you can be together again, but you're going to be stars in the sky. You'll be together forever, but you won't be human anymore. You'll be these stars. Mm-hmm. I'm getting off track. I'm sorry. But the Gemini kind of offers for us that like divided self and this idea of multiple parts of self and how we can be intimate with the self. But I'm wondering, you know, you kind of made a joke about like being a Gemini, so it's hard to make decisions. And I actually also think that some depictions of the lovers, like very early in medieval times, would have three people. And so it was like one of them was having to like make a choice. Yeah, there was like a little bit of a love triangle. So the Gemini of the card was like...
Dude, I love love triangles. I love that. Yeah. No, and that's one thing that I saw too that I wanted to ask you about because, again, like in my Reddit obsession, me looking at lover stuff, I saw that the lover card is also like a depiction of choices, which I found to be so interesting because, I mean, I'm so bad at making decisions. And choices, like literally I run for the hills immediately. And I feel like I'm not the only Gem. Like I feel like most of the Geminis in my life are like, I can't make a decision for the life of me. And so that's so interesting that that is, you know, tied to the lover's card, which is then tied to Gemini. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that's why I like there must be, it must be sort of on purpose, if not by the people who chose it, but like by the cosmos kind of bringing us this symbology. Do you feel when you're like faced with a choice that it's just too hard to like cut something off? And so, cause like if you choose one thing, you say no to the other, is that what's hard for you?
Yeah. And I think exactly. And also, it's more of like, I can see myself doing both things. Like I'm able to kind of see the reality of making one choice over the other and vice versa. So I'm like, okay, so how do I choose? I mean, both sound great, you know, kind of thing. So that's really, my predicament is like being able to see multiple sides of things just makes it a little bit harder than to actually decide on the one thing that I need to do or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting. It also seems like a kind of loving stance. It's like, well, I see these two possibilities for myself and I kind of love them both. So how do I like turn away from one and choose the other? It's a love triangle. Like every choice is a love triangle.
Literally. Like I'm getting anxious right now just thinking about
it. The other thing, like Geminis are air signs and in the tarot, air is the swords and that's all about like the brain and the thoughts. And Geminis are also known to like have a lot of thoughts and like be kind of communicative and like chatty and have like quick minds. So, but I'm curious, like what were you kind of investigating around Gemini and how did that come to be the umbrella for the book connected to this word gospel, which is like a loving song for, I mean, I know gospels are like kind of like a book, but also, you know, in modern times, it's a song devoted to God.
Yes.
Out of love, right? So tell us about that.
Yeah, I love this question. Definitely you're on the right track with like gospel being kind of this like devotion to or ode to or song to kind of a more like godly figure. But I wanted to like input Gemini in that sort of deity focal point. But I think, so really the first, so the poem Gemini Gospel came first. And that I wrote kind of at a workshop that Austin Poetry Slam was doing like two summers ago. And I forget the prompt, but basically like Gemini Gospel kind of came from that. And I had just started dating my now husband. And I had just gotten out of a really weird relationship with an older man that was also a Gemini, and he was like very manipulative. And so I was just kind of like I, when I met Nick and Nick was just such a good person, I felt like I didn't deserve him. And I felt, then I started thinking, I'm like, man, it's because I'm a Gemini. I'm just such a bad person. Like, you know, I don't deserve this. And then that's how Gemini Gospel, the poem, kind of came to be. And then when I was kind of in the process of making the chapbook, I was thinking about how it was so complicated while really freshly grieving my father. And Gemini Gospel just seemed to be kind of this overarching vibe that I wanted to go for, where I'm like, Gospel one, because that, you know, brings out the image of like the religious undertones and spirituality that is so prevalent in my work. But then Gemini, because I feel like me being a Gemini shaped the way I grieved my father, or I am still grieving my father, but it's such a big part of how I grieve, I feel like.
Can you say more about that? Like how, what does it mean to be a Gemini, or to grieve in a, and first, I'm sorry, you have lost your father.
Thank you.
You write beautifully about him and remembering him in the chapbook. But yeah, what does it mean to grieve in a Gemini way, or how, you know, how did being a Gemini help you access the grief or process the grief?
Yeah, I love that, grieving a Gemini way. So in grieving my father, it was so complicated, and talk about duality, because I think in grieving somebody, I had never, you know, of course, like I've lost like my grandparents and all that, but it's so different from losing like a father or like a more of a parental figure. It was so complicated because my dad was a lot older than I was. And like he passed away when he was about 74. And at the time I was like 23. And so he didn't understand me. I think he didn't know how to communicate with me, and it bothered the fuck out of me. And we constantly were like butting heads. And so when he was alive, we had a really tumultuous relationship. And, you know, for like the year before he passed, him and I didn't talk for like 6 months because he didn't like my current boyfriend, which sucks now, kind of like as an aside. Like he died thinking I was still with that man, which I'm so mad about. But anyways, so yeah, I was in grieving him. I was coming to terms with the fact that, okay, yes, like I at times didn't like my dad. I hated him sometimes. But then when you lose that person, it's like, but I also loved him. Like he also was just human. He was just a person dealing with his own things. Like he had PTSD. I'm pretty sure he had depression because of that. He had been in the Vietnam War. Like he went through so many things. And I think if I had an ounce of the appreciation that I have now of him, then it would have been a whole lot different. But that's how grieving him is like. I'm just able to see like all the different sides of him. I'm able to see all the different sides of like my grief, like all the hate I have for him, but all the love and pride that I have of him too.
Yeah, that's really beautiful and really powerful. And I think for folks, I mean, it's rare maybe that people don't have some complicated relationship with a parent.
Right.
But when you lose a parent without some like resolution in your life around that, or some like healing that happens for you together, then there's all this like open wounds, you know?
All unknown. Yeah, 100%. And like, I was just going to say that it is kind of like grieving is to your point, like exactly to your point. It's like grieving is so lonely because of that. Like I've done so much healing by myself, and I just wish like I'm going to cry. I told you I was going to cry. And I just wish that, you know, he was here with me to like heal, because I wish he healed like 100%. Like I wish I could have taken all the burden that he had at the end. But yeah, it's a lonely process for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're the only person who can kind of viscerally, you know, in every cell of your body sort of perceive the complicated relationship that you had, you know? And I wonder if like your mystical orientation gives you any sense of like a relationship with him beyond his time on earth.
Yeah, I 100% believe that to be true. I mean, even when I was saying that it's a lonely process, I still feel like even though he's not with me in a physical sense, like he, in another kind of way, he can heal with me. Like the grieving is definitely tied very spiritually with me. I kind of have this idea in my head that like as I'm healing, I'm also becoming just that much more like spiritually aligned with myself. And therefore I'm bringing more like good energy my way. Like, so for example, like since he's passed, I've, you know, been being more forefront about my healing process in general. I think just grieving him kind of skyrocketed that process for me. But yeah, I feel like all good things it's only been good things that have happened since he's passed. And I'd like to think that he's the reason for that in one way or another. So I feel really tied still like closely with him, even though he's not physically here.
Yeah. Do you feel like he's like helping set things up for you and like opening doors or clearing paths or things like that?
Oh, 100%. Like 100%. And I feel that because like when I have dreams of him, it's really weird because like I'll have dreams of him when I wake up, I'm like, yeah, that was him. Like he came to visit me. And then I have like times when I wake up, I've had a dream with him in it. And I'm like, yeah, that wasn't him. That was actually just me like making him up in my dream. Since he's passed, I've definitely had more occurrences of him coming to me in a very like real sense, I feel like. And then also because I met Nick right after he passed, it's kind of this like inside joke, although it's not really a joke, but an inside kind of conversation that like Nick is my guardian angel and my dad like brought him into my life. Like that's kind of something that my sister and my mom talk about all the time.
I'm gonna cry.
Yeah, I love that question. Now stop it.
Well, crying is just love juice. So it's appropriate for this episode.
Yes.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I love what you said too about not just like loving, you know, different parts of yourself or the different stages of your kind of self-acceptance and healing, but also letting yourself be with all the flavors of grief in the process.
Yes.
And I think that's part of the way forward, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that's hard because grief is just so painful. And
yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons that I thought of you for this card, I am lucky that we live in the same area and we're like, I'm not like on the scene. I'm very hermit-like, but when I go out to events involving writers, there's a chance I will see Bianca, which is very exciting. And I've seen you read from the book a couple times and you bring, your presence has just this like delightful energy. There's like so much spirit and joviality, and it's just kind of like you're vibrating with like love energy. It's like you've cultivated so much for yourself. It feels to me that it just kind of like go stand by Bianca and you'll start feeling it for yourself too.
Oh, that's so sweet, Cecily. Thank you.
And it's just very playful. And like when I bought your book at one event and you signed it, you also like gave it a kiss with a little bit of lipstick and it's called Gemini Gospel. Anyway, like it's just like so obvious it had to be you. But I'm curious about, and I know like I don't have any expectation and I only, you know you a little bit, but like, and so I certainly don't think you go through every minute of your day feeling that amazing vibration, but I'm like a person who we could say has like resting bitch face. It's like very shy. And so when I see someone like you, I'm like, wow, just like amazing, amazing feels so good. Like you just like, you know, bring a room up. So I'm curious, like, I don't know how much you think about it, but how do you, is that, I'm sure that's part of your nature, but how do you cultivate it? Yeah. How do you think about it?
Yeah, no. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that, it kind of like I emanate that energy. That's really sweet. So there was this one time in high school that I was just like feeling really sad. And I think it was probably about a boy. You know what I mean? Who knows at this point? And there was a girl that was like, hey, like you're so, like you seem so sad. Like that's so different from how you usually are. Like just be happy. Or like she said something like that. And for some reason that like really bothered me because I'm like, I can't be sad sometimes. Like, you know what I mean? And so that is something that I struggle with. Because I out that energy, then sometimes I feel like guilty whenever I am feeling sort of not like when I'm like, I actually don't feel that today. Like, I don't want to pretend that I'm, you know, this person or whatever. So that is something I think about. And it's funny because, you know, I have diagnosed depression and I'm also diagnosed with a panic disorder. I have really bad anxiety. And so I think like one of my coping mechanisms, I don't know, you know, is just kind of trying to not focus on what's going on in my head. Because talk about me having so many thoughts, like, you know what I mean? It literally feels like I have like 500 people up in there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I try to stay as lighthearted as I can, because I feel like if I focus too much on the thoughts that I have that are negative thinking, then I will just be such a terrible person. And I already have like such a complex with thinking that I'm a terrible person. Like I don't need to actually be that, you know? So I do try to kind of make sure that the people around me aren't affected by the thoughts that I have in my head. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm glad you're sharing that and kind of deconstruct, you know, like I perceive this thing when I see you, but that's like a very, you know, I'm only perceiving like a small part of what of your life and like what's going on for you. And I can see how like having reflections like that creates like the added pressure you already put on yourself. Like it sounds a little bit like you're taking care of others or making sure that like your emotional world doesn't like spill over into other people's.
Yeah, exactly. And I have, you know, again, I think about it so often. And so when I do kind of get triggered whenever somebody is affected by what I'm thinking, because I like am too outward about it. And then they have a different perception of me because of that. I can't deal with it for some reason. I have a really hard time with other people having a different perception of me than what I do. Again, something I'm talking about with my therapist. But yeah, I think the only person that has really seen me and who I am and the emotions that I go, like the various emotions that I go through day to day is Nick. I mean, of course, I'm not even my mom, you know, I was very hesitant. I didn't tell my mom that I was diagnosed with depression or a panic disorder until a year after I was diagnosed and after I'd already been taking medication that helps me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I absolutely consider myself a sad person. Funny enough, like I am very concerned with my sadness, and I'm also incredibly scared of being lonely, which is, again, like back to the lover's card, like there, it's always depicted as like two people or two selves. And yeah, it's just, it's funny because I think that's my worst fear is being lonely. If I really had to like pinpoint it, you know?
Mm. Yeah. And that like, you know, in the lover's card, there's something kind of toxically reinforcing about it that like in our culture, it seems like there's this narrative that like either you partner up or die alone. It's like
Right.
Or at least like for women, maybe when they're dating, that's the like duality for them. It's like very one or the other. And so there's so much placed on like getting that partner and making sure you're not lonely forever. Mm-hmm. And then there's not a lot of like conversation around the difference between being alone and like being in your own energy or having solitude versus like loneliness, you know, feeling like a lack of connection. And there's so much there.
No, it's so rich. There's like just so much to talk about.
Here's what I wanted to touch on is that when you were talking about Nick and talking about like the one person who's really, you feel like has seen you more fully than anyone else in your life. Mm-hmm. One of the beautiful things I think the Lovers offers us is this reminder that healing, like really powerful healing, happens in relationship. Like there's the work we do with our therapist, and that's like looking in the past and like bringing some of those selves out into the room. But then we need to go like apply it in a relationship.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And when you have someone who's like there and willing to let you flounder in these parts of yourself or like just be really honest about how you feel, what you're thinking, like all the thoughts that you want to like beat yourself up for having, mm-hmm. you know, and someone's like, yeah, it's okay. And like when you in your body had this sense of fear that like, if I'm really honest about who I am, no one's going to be here and I'm going to be lonely. And so I don't know, do you feel like it seems just so like you're right, so magical, so beautiful, like blessed angels and everything that Nick arrived mm-hmm. kind of in this moment that was incredibly hard for you and then aligning with this healing journey that you would start.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that reminds me of like something I read, where it was like, where something about how, like, whenever you're getting to a more healthy relationship, it will often happen where you are triggered more, because you're just not used to like the more healthier conversation. So you just don't know how to really like go about it. And that is so true for me. I feel like I was just constantly met with like, even though I was like being triggered, I was constantly met with patience from Nick. And it's so like, whenever he asked me to be his girlfriend, which no one had ever asked me to be their girlfriend before, let me just say, and that was so cute. He asked me to be his girlfriend. I said yes. Then I freaked the fuck out. And then the next day, I broke up with him. And I was just like, actually, I think we should like maybe relax, like chill. But in my head, I was just like, I don't deserve this man. Like, I would be the worst for him. I'm such a bad person. Like, you know, all the things that I feel like I was thinking whenever I was with my ex, but they were like with my ex, they were reaffirmed all the time. So then I never got to like really undo that sort of thinking. So yeah, I broke up with Nick and then he met my family for like the 4th of July and my family loved him. And it just kind of solidified that actually I really loved him. And then I was like, hey, remember that question you asked me? Can you ask me again? And then he whispered it in my ear. And then...
Sexy.
I know. but all that to say is that I was just so triggered. And all because Nick is just such a good person. but yeah.
Yeah, that's real. That's totally real. Mm-hmm. When I think it's 100% true that like... You know, we kind of start out like having relationships that sort of replicate the various degrees of trauma we might have experienced in our early years. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, I hate this. This doesn't look anything like the fantasy in my mind. And maybe we go to therapy. Maybe like, you know, we get a little more confident. We get a little more self-loving. We start finding different kinds of partners. And, but yeah, like once you take that leap to like another kind of person who gives you a love that you did actually fantasize about, your nervous system is like, we don't know about this. Like this is,
I don't know what to do. Yeah.
Yeah. You can fantasize about it, but you can't have it. Mm-hmm. And I love too how you're like, no, let's chill. And then you're like, meet my family.
I know. I remember when my brother was there at the 4th of July. And my brother was like, I thought y'all were just friends. Y'all don't talk like friends. You don't like, and I'm like, shut up. We're just friends.
Yeah. That's so funny.
But yeah, we're still calling each other like babe and like holding hands and stuff. I was just lying to myself. You know how it goes, that's me.
Yeah. And I think like Nick knew it too.
Oh yeah. I love how we're like talking about this and he's like right behind me.
Yeah.
It's casual. Oh my God. Do you have sunglasses on? Oh my God. He's just wearing sunglasses. All cool guy back there.
Wow. Yeah. We can see Nick over Bianca's shoulder in his office doing.
He's my little angel on my shoulder.
Yeah, he really is. Are you enjoying these explorations of tarot's archetypes? If so, I think you might enjoy my new workbook / playbook called Tarot for Creative Spirits. I designed it to help the tarot curious learn about the cards through journaling prompts and creative prompts and self-reflection. The way that I learned was through a kind of encyclopedic study. And I don't recommend that to others now that I'm several years deep into a tarot practice. I really advocate that folks learn tarot through practice and experience and conversation. I'm also a big proponent of journaling. I think it's an incredible way to move emotional energy through the body. It's a great way to be in conversation with yourself in a way that everyday life just does not facilitate for us. And as I've said before, and as I will say again, the self is a rich galaxy. There is so much inside of us to discover, and we are always changing. So this book is also meant to help you deepen your connection with yourself, which is what the Lover's card is all about. So it's a flexible book. You can write in it, of course. There's also opportunities for coloring and creativity. I worked with my friend who's an illustrator and artist, Ami Plas, and he designed a beautiful cover. And the book is filled with black and white illustrations that you can color as well. Many of them are nature-based, and they're meant to reinforce your understanding of the cards. So for example, the prompts for the Lover's card include questions like, what conditions make it easy for you to feel loved? And what conditions make it easy for you to be loving toward someone else? And how do you like to show love to yourself? And then there's a little space where we take some of those journaling answers and turn them into a little cut and paste kind of love poem. So it's a rich, dynamic way to work with the cards and a beautiful book to support you in your own journey of healing, self-exploration, discovery, reconnecting with your intuition, your creativity. And I'd love for you to know about it and enjoy it and check it out and work with it. I think it will bring beautiful things into your life. Folks who work with it say that after they sit down to journal, they feel a great sense of relief and lightness. A lot of people use it by pulling a card and going to the prompt associated with that card. And I found that whatever card you get on a given day is the one you need to work with. Like whatever's going on in your life that's kind of difficult or tricky, the prompt is meant to help you tease that out and untie that knot and release some of that energy that feels heavy around whatever may be going on. So it's beautiful for self-care, for your mental health, for your spiritual health, and for learning more about tarot, which is a technology that I think we can all use to feel more supported, more connected spiritually. It's an affordable technology and it travels so easily and it requires no scrolling. It's a beautiful thing and it's ancient and it wants to work with you. So if you are interested in tarot for creative spirits, head over to the website typewritertarot.com, look for the shop button and you'll find it there. And you can use the discount code MAGICALLIFE to save $10 on the book. Once you place your order, I myself will wrap your book in a beautiful wrapping paper. I'm also going to pull a card for you and include a mystic message, which is a tarot card along with an interpretive poem to help you kick off your journey. I really want this to feel like a special gift that's coming into your life. That's why I'm selling it myself and taking it to the post office myself and wrapping each book myself. I do that with intention and I'm wishing beautiful magic for every person that I send the book to. So I hope you'll check it out and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about Nick, this angel on your shoulder.
Of course, literally.
Would you start, maybe would you read the poem in the collection called For Nick?
Yes. This poem is called For Nick. It is morning to us or afternoon to others, and our world is a plate of huevos with homemade salsa, a kiss on the forehead. I dreamt that you and I were listening to vinyl on a porch. If I was a musician, I would sing about that time you cleaned my father's gravestone the first time you met him, or how much you love Mongols, or when you called me Atmosita, your huero tongue learning mine. Or I would write a song about when my mom told me I wish your dad got to meet him, or when you make the last bite of all of our meals enough for the two of us. Or maybe I'd write a love song about your butt. Somewhere in Texas, our porch is waiting for us. Billie Holiday is there too, and Selena and the Beatles, singing that song about how much it hurts to love. But you and I are like, nah, it's pretty easy when it feels like this.
I love that one. I love them all. I especially, that one has a butt in it. I just love the butt reference kind of thrown in casually. And it occurs to me now, kind of listening to one of your podcast episodes, which we'll talk about in a minute, and like the timing of some things, is the porch for listening to vinyl in the poem, is that like at the time it was written a wish and then the wish was fulfilled? Like that's your... It seems like that's kind of like a life you have now. Is that true?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Okay.
That is true. So at the time that I was writing this my last year in the MFA. And I had yet to graduate, but I had applied for the Clark House residency, which for listeners that don't know about this, the Texas State's MFA program has a residency for graduating third years, in which, you know, a graduating third year would apply, and then they won it, they would receive a residency in this house in Smithville, Texas. And it's like a 1 year rent-free just time to write. And so when I met Nick, I was kind of like gunning for that house. From the beginning, I was like, hi, person that I just started dating. I am manifesting this house and you're going to live with me when I move into this house. So I wrote this poem at that point when I didn't know that I was going to later be awarded that residency in Smithville.
Amazing. So like you already had the house in mind, like the specific porch you were dreaming of, that was already in your awareness. You wrote a poem, you manifested it. In the poem, I think you're saying, like, it's Nick saying, I had a dream that we listened to vinyl on a porch. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did that happen where he had that dream?
Yeah, that did happen, like where he was telling me about this dream that he had. And I was like, for me, dreams are just so important for me. And such a tie to me, like it's like a tie to like another world, like another kind of level of consciousness. And so like, if you look, if I were to like give you my phone and you see messages between me and my sister, it's just like her and I exchanging our dreams from the night before. And my sister's dreams, by the way, again, as an aside, her dreams come true, like literally all the time.
Wow.
So anyways, it's like a very important thing in my life. So Nick had told me that he had this dream, and in my head, I'm like, oh my God, like I'm definitely going to get this house, like 100%. Yeah. And then I think it was like a few weeks later, I got the email that I had received the residency, and we moved into this house. On the first day, like the move-in day, Nick proposed to me on this same porch.
Wow.
And that's, you know, at the same time, that's whenever I got, you know, the email from Post Publications that my chapbook was, they were going to be publishing my chapbook. And then, I don't know, it was just such a whirlwind. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But yes, that's the porch. It's the Clark House in Smithville, Texas, right on Main Street. Love that porch. Listen to a lot of music on that porch. Yes, my own.
It all came true. He dreamed it. Yeah. You put it in a poem, and there it is.
Boom. There it is.
The magic. Yep. I love it. So for you and Nick, and then the poem finishes with like the supposition, loving is hard. And you and Nick are like, yeah, we don't, it's kind of easy when it's like this. And I wonder, like, what is the thing, what are the things that make it easy? And I'm, you know, maybe there have been hard days, I would imagine, or I would be really annoyed with you both if you're just like the perfect couple. But like, what do y'all do to keep it easy? Or
So I think it's, you know, I saw like a TikTok, I think, that was like saying how loving, you know, they kind of say that like loving somebody or being married to somebody, I guess now in our case that we're married, is hard work, like always work, right? And some person was like, yeah, but it's not work in the sense of like doing a 9-to-5, stuck in traffic, you know, coffee grounds and like coffee stains on your shirt, like type of work. It's like the same work that like a painter talks about, like a sculpture or something, or, you know, it's that sort of work, that like very passionate sort of work that they feel like has to be done, right? Like an artist feels like their work has to be done or not, they're not living. That's the kind of way that I would describe Nick and I's relationship, is that I get triggered very often. I have daddy issues, I believe. And I have, you know, self-image issues. I have confidence issues. I have really bad anxiety. So I bring baggage to this relationship 100%. But I think what has helped is the way that both of us communicate. So Nick is a Virgo. So both of our ruling planet is Mercury, which is the planet of communication. Correct?
Yes.
And communication has been such a biggie in our relationship, which is so nice, because I felt like in past relationships, whenever I tried to like put my thoughts into words, it was never met with kindness or patience or anything of the sort. And so to have found somebody that really reflects the same energy that I put into them and reflects it back at me, is just so nice and so easy. Like I'm like, man, every other relationship I've had, that's been hard. This is the easier one. And that's because I get triggered more. You know, it's just kind of one of those complicated facts of life of being human, is that the more work you put into somebody, the more things will come up, more conversations, more harder conversations will come up. But at the end of the day, Nick tells me this all the time, like, at the end of the day, like, we've told each other that we're worth the work. So we're going to do the work kind of thing. Mm.
Yeah. I'm going to try not to cry again. yeah. And the communication, see, like, that's really cool that you both have, like, you know, have Mercury ruling your yeah. situation, and that the communication, like, if we're thinking about the Lover's card, it's not a story, it's not a poem, it's a visual expression. And so we see the figures often, as we've talked about, like, naked as a way of, like, communicating the true self. But that, yeah, like, that goes a long way. Like, you know, we experience that sexually, like, when we're sexually intimate with people in different ways. And, like, but the way to, like, build a relationship, like, you have to express yourself through language and just communicate. Right. And, you know, I don't want to believe you bring a lot of baggage. You just, like, bring, you bring, like, the fullness of your Gemini self.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You need, like, to be understood, we have to communicate. And, like, that's what we're in a relationship for, to feel that sense of understanding or being understood and belonging. And so, if you're in a relationship where communication feels like a minefield, like, you can't create the intimacy because it isn't safe to show who mm-hmm. you are. And then you're just kind of performing this relationship versus, like, feeling, you know, that connection.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think at the very, like, base level, foundational level, like, Nick is that representation for me. If I'm thinking about, like, the more traditional depiction of the Lover's card, I definitely see, like, me and Nick. But now that you kind of bring up that there was, like, this threesome happening in some cards, I'm like, yeah, it's me, Nick, and my other self. Like, my other, because it's definitely, like, I feel like it's us three in this relationship, because in order to kind of love him, I'm having to come to terms with my other self and my, like, kind of more, like shadow self, I think is the best description of it. Because, yeah, in loving Nick and being in this relationship, too, you know, you kind of mentioned how being in relationships can kind of, like, spearhead the healing process in yourself. And that's, like, I've learned that to be 100% true. So, yeah, I kind of like that. A little threesome. It's me, him, and myself.
I like that. Yeah, then he gets two Biancas. Like, what a lucky...
Oh, my God. Dream comes right? true.
I feel like for me, it would be, it's me, my partner, and all my past relationships lumped into one being. It's like haunting the room.
Interesting. I feel like that's a poem. That's a poem prompt right there.
Okay, take it away. Have fun with that.
we'll do it.
Speaking of poetry, that's another of your loves, and writing and creativity. And as you mentioned, you did an MFA program, and mm-hmm. I've done an MFA program too. I have a lot of thoughts about MFA programs and how they support the writer and how they complicate things for the writer. And now you're like, you've graduated and now you're working inside the same program that you were a student in.
Right.
And so I'm just curious, maybe, like, what are some of the big, how's your, like, love for poetry benefited from the MFA, or maybe how has it been complicated by the MFA?
Sure. Yeah, I love that. So definitely, I mean, I have the privilege to say that I was given, like, these 3 years to really focus on my craft and, you know, kind of open up myself to, like, networking with other writers in this field. And so that has been, like, tremendously, tremendously helpful. And I mean, Gemini Gospel, all the poems in the book are poems that I wrote and workshopped in the MFA. I'm working on my full length and all those poems I wrote in the MFA. And so I don't know how much I would have written if I didn't have that structure that the MFA provided for me. Because I very much am a person that needs structure. So it was nice to kind of have that kind of built in. Now, I will say that, like, you know, my first year was a very, like, you know, growing pain sort of situation in the MFA, because there weren't, it was like me and maybe like two other, maybe one other like Latinx person. And it wasn't, you know, a for sure thing that I would even be in the same class as them. So it would happen a lot where I would bring a poem to workshop that was either, you know, kind of where I practice code switching, or I, you know, kind of mentioned something that's very particular to my culture, and nobody else in the room understood that, or like no one had experience with that. And so I was very like jaded with the workshop in that way. So now that I'm kind of the MFA program coordinator and the assistant director, you know, at the same program that I was in, I feel like I have like the insight to kind of tell students like, hey, like, because I tell it like it is, because I feel like that's what students hope for. And so, yeah, with incoming students, I always tell them like, hey, just to let you know, this is going to be a thing. And you might feel like you don't have readers in the classroom, but that's not a particular, you know, issue with our MFA. It's kind of like MFAs in general. I think it's a really good learning experience because you learn that not everyone will be your reader and not everyone is your audience. And I'm so glad that I learned that from the beginning, because now that I'm going to like readings and I'm, you know, talking to other poets, and I don't know, I feel like I just have more insight, and now I feel like less weird whenever somebody's like, actually, I don't understand that. And I'm like, that's okay. Like, that's totally fine that you don't understand that. Move on. Like, let's move on kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like I wouldn't have that otherwise if I didn't have the MFA kind of open my eyes in that way.
Yeah, that's interesting. And one thing I think can happen in an MFA, because you're in, you know, you get that time and you get that structure, but you also kind of end up in this like, it's almost like being in a little commune with a bunch of other writers, even though you don't live together, but you like see each other multiple times a week. You're in works, like, you know, I was like in with this person in three different workshops, right? And like, so, and you spend, you know, 3 hours in a workshop once a week. And for that time of the MFA, primarily, like the only people who are your readers are the other students. So there's this danger of like really losing your own voice or starting to like write for the other people who are in your workshop, or what you think, based on what you think they might think about you if you wrote that or that. And so it can be like just a total mind fuck. But I love how you took from that, that like, no, actually, I got more used to like people, not everyone's my reader, but there are a lot of readers that I am writing for and they exist, and I'm not going to see them in my MFA program Monday through Friday.
Yeah. The world is much bigger than the MFA program.
Right.
100%. Yeah. Definitely.
Another of your passions, you have many loves, oatmeal, X-Files, but also Mick, obviously, and his butt.
Obviously.
Yeah. But one of them is horror, the genre, the film, books, TV shows, whatever.
Everything. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. And you host a podcast with a friend of yours called The Basement Girls, and it's all focused on the horror genre. And interestingly, like the logo for Basement Girls kind of looks like the Lovers. There's two figures.
Yeah, they have, like, very true.
Film reel heads. And I think it's great that you're like doing a podcast about something you love with a friend that presumably you also love. And will you talk to us, like, I'm curious about your like fascination with horror, especially as someone, you know, you said you have anxiety, and I'm like trying to imagine having anxiety and watching horror movies.
I have a hot take with that. And because I thought about, I'm like, why the fuck do I love horror so much when I feel like everything scares me? Because I constantly am asking myself, what if this happened? What if that happened? And then, you know, a panic attack ensues. So my theory, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to think of this, but at least in my experience, horror as a genre, especially as like, you know, a genre in movies, there's a structure to it, right? Like, I think Scream, the movie Scream, kind of pulls it together really nicely. Like if you say, like, I'll be right back, you're going to die. If the first person that shows their tits, they're going to die. Like there's like structure to it. And I believe to me, I'm like, I think that's why I love horror so much as a person with anxiety, because there's not what ifs that are happening. Like I know what's going to happen. And so I think that when I like came to that realization for myself, I feel like I was like, oh my God, it all makes sense. Like, that's why I love it. I also love the darkness associated with horror. I feel like, yes, like I'm a very like bubbly person, but I also love that duality of like being a bubbly person that also loves dark things. And I feel like that's like can be seen even in the book cover of Gemini Gospel. Like, there's the rose, which is so beautiful, so feminine. But then there's like this more mysterious kind of undertone with like the two-headed snake and like the blood / tears. Like there's that duality still depicted. Yeah, because I think the horror genre has this very sublime. When I say sublime, I think like, you know, in The Conjuring or that universe, they have like, where horror movies in general, they'll have like really creepy images, but then there's like old school like lullabies playing in the background, which we would associate as very like positive, calming things. But when there's those two are interconnected, it actually makes it scarier.
Right.
And so I love it. I could like talk forever about it. I'm such a nerd about it. But yeah, I love having the podcast with Steph Grossman, who is another writer, fiction writer. And it really just started because both her and I were watching movies during COVID and then like texting each other about it, being like, oh, have you seen this one? Yeah, like let's watch it like at the same time, even though we can't be in the same room. And then like, let's talk about it. And then we were just like, wait, why don't we do a podcast? And then that, it just birthed from there.
Perfect. How has the podcast, how has it affected your love affair with horror?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely more intentional when I watch horror movies now. Like, I feel like I kind of have that podcaster hat on. Where like, okay, how can I talk about this in a podcast, right? And then also, I think it's broadened my horizons a little bit. Like, I feel like I'm a little bit more open to just watching everything and anything. And it's also been really interesting because we've, instead of it just being Steph and I, we've kind of incorporated bringing on other people, other writers, other people in the industry. We were able to interview an editor from a movie that we really loved, and it was our first episode that we talked about it in. And so kind of bringing on other writers has been really interesting because we get more insight into their writing and how they think about horror. And it's just opened things up for me, like 100%.
Awesome. Yeah. You just get to go deeper, more expansive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Get me deep.
It's a great podcast. Everyone go listen. And since there, I think maybe the poem that leapt out to me in the chapbook that most honors the horror landscape is La Llorona. And I wonder, will you say a little bit about that figure in Latin American culture? And will you share the poem with us as well?
Yes, of course. So La Llorona, for those listeners that are unaware of her mythology, La Llorona is kind of this icon in Latin America, this like crying woman. And I know it as like a border story where this woman has like lost her two children because in a fit of rage and despair, because she found her husband cheating on her, she killed her two children and her kid and herself and drowned herself in the river. And now she's kind of this figure of like warning almost, like for kids not to go out at night or else she'll drown you. And she's just like wailing the whole time. So that's kind of the traditional mythology of her. I see her as a very like feminist sort of icon, because most often, especially in movies that have come out about her, like, you know, depicting her fictionally, they always make her out to be the bad guy. But I'm like, okay, first of all, It's the man that cheated on her. Okay. It's not her fault she leapt into madness, you know?
I mean, right.
She was cheated on. She was being cheated on. And then she's also this, like, iconography of grief personifying, mm-hmm. which was the most interesting to me. Kind of this, like, wailing for eternity, like, so heartbroken, but now she's just, like, grief personified. And when I was writing this, so I wrote this specific poem, probably, like, this one is my only one that I had written before the MFA. And at first it was a slam, because I used to do slam poetry. I started off doing slam poetry in high school, and then was on a slam poetry team at UT Austin. So this poem comes from a slam. And so it was meant to kind of be performed, and I wanted her to be in this poem, a representation of the mothers that lose their kids at the border because of, you know, immigration and all the horrendous stories of that. So that's what this poem is. So I'd love to read it. Arrullo de la Llorona. With the heavy burden of infinity on the small of her back, she painted the stars with her tears and pretended that her reflection in the river was that of a woman more lamentable, a wanderer, a cursed entity. La Llorona dragged her bare feet along the river, counted silence, counted eternity. You know the story, you know of its darkness, you know not to go out into the night, the color of her hair. You know better than to smile at watery reflections. Listen, do you hear that silence? Like screams beneath waters, Rio Bravo del Norte, furious river, angry river, river that splits the dry body between Texas and Mexico, river of the tides that yell so loud they could swallow you whole, swallow you gone, swallow you so fast you wouldn't remember what wet feels like as it makes new skin. Listen, this woman, vagabond of vast eternity, La Llorona cried so much that the river called her sister, mi hermosa hermana. The crying woman asked Dios if she could enter heaven through the gates or the wall, America, an empty promesa. He told her to ask for forgiveness that never came, so she became the unapologetic tides beneath still water. She became unwoman, unbeing. Once, my grandmother told me, grita cuando quieren que te quedes tranquila. I know the story of my ancestors. I hear them in my dad's rough rasp, in the shake of my grandmother's hand, in the ripple of the river that almost took my great-grandfather's chance of a dream, in the tale of a crying woman with long, dark hair. Nod if you know the story. Yell if you know the ending.
Oh, so good. That one moves me so deeply. And I love what you're doing with that figure. Like that La Llorona was not, you know, part of my culture as a white kid, but growing up in Texas, like there's lots of proximity. And so like I've known of her, and I think you do just like such an incredible job complicating her and animating her. And I start to see her as this, like, yeah, she's like, her feature is that she's crying so profusely, but that can only come from a place of love. So in that right. way, she's kind of like this, like what love is, but with, you know, the sense of loss. And like, I love how you touch into her anger and connect her with the water. So beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think being a lover means that you're that much closer to madness. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of I had to memorize a Shakespeare sonnet in college, and I think about it very often. I think that there's a reason why I was drawn to it. I, you know, at the time I just picked it randomly, but it's a sonnet, I forget the number, but it's like a sonnet, and it begins with like, my love is as a fever, longing still for that which longer nursed the disease. And it's this idea that like, the love that you have for somebody is so, so strong, so palpable, so tangible, that it's like a sickness that overtakes the body. And like, it drives you mad. Well, it drives you to the point of madness, right? And I, to me, that's so, so real. Being a lover means that I will literally, I think if it came down to it, would I kill somebody? Maybe not.
But you, like, with La Llorona, it's like, can we blame her?
Exactly.
We've all felt that anger.
Exactly.
And like the delusion that gets like brought in front of you, or, you know, whatever the case is. And like, yeah, it upends your reality, and it can undo you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, I love that. It can undo you. Yep.
Yeah. That's why, I don't know. Like, I think it's making me think like, okay, there's kind of like that natural in that way. A love story is a horror story, or it can be,
yeah.
Or there's certainly like the blending of the genres, plenty of cases. Mm. But yeah, like, we desperately want this love even while we fear it. Cause like, how will it change us, or how could it undo us if it doesn't adhere to the fantasy? And then I was thinking too, like, I was trying to like kind of connect it to the fear maybe we naturally have of like loving ourselves, or like looking at ourselves. Cause I think there's like, you know, a crazy person inside all of us that like sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm kind of like rambling in response, but I just love that poem. It really like opens things up and makes her like also a compassionate figure, and kind of gives all of us permission to love ourselves a little bit more. I don't know. Am I taking that too far?
No, I think so. I think like she's often depicted as this kind of like monstrosity, this like I mentioned in the poem, like this unwoman, this unbeing, this kind of separate from humanness. But I think she is the epitome of what true human, or what true humanity looks like. And I think it scares people too much. And so then now she's like, this like monstrous,
demonized. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like, kind of growing up in a culture where La Llorona is like real, and also in a Catholic culture, and while Catholicism is certainly very, I mean, I shouldn't speak like I know I have many Catholic friends. They love Catholics. They're just like some of my favorite people.
You heard it here first, mate. He loves Catholics.
I didn't grow up like having to do a particular religion.
Sure.
So I'm also like, you know, really curious what it must have been like to really have that like as a huge part of your life. So but I guess what I'm getting at is kind of like how a sense of witchcraft or like mysticism, brujería, I don't know how you want to think about it, like how that's kind of like bubbled up into your life. Or I don't know if there's anything you want to say about that, just that feels relevant today.
No, I have so many things to say about that. So I grew up, my parents are, you know, my mom's extremely religious. My dad was too. I did like the whole communion, confirmation, like all that. I went to like Sunday school, like, and I think it was whenever I moved out of the house to go to college that I was kind of able and had that space to understand religion in my own way. And I kind of then grew into thinking of religion outside of an institution, and more of like myself as this like spiritual person. So I always say that I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. And, you know, I have people, like I just had somebody last week who came to my house for the first time, and they asked me how religious I am, because they noticed so many crosses and so many like Catholic imagery in my house. And I was like, actually, I'm not religious at all. It's just, you know, the Catholic imagery and the iconography is just so closely tied to my culture, being, you know, Mexican, Latina. And so it just feels very cozy to me, very homey, to kind of have like crosses above every threshold, or to have like the Virgin Mary is such, like, I have like a ton, like I'll show you, like I have like a ton of these like little statues of the Virgin Mary everywhere, because talk about another feminist figure right. in my life. Yeah. And then it just bleeds into my poetry, because Catholic imagery is so rich. Like, it's just so rich.
Yeah.
Also like very dark. Maybe because I watch so many like religious horror movies that I'm like, it's just a well of images that I need to tap into for things to make sense. So yeah, that's kind of my relationship to religion and how it, you know, just kind of blends itself to just, you know, I invite it into my poetry, because it's just such a huge part of my life. Like, I literally like have the Sagrada, like the Corazón Sagrada on my wrist, because
the lovers.
That, yeah,
I'm like in love again.
Like, I just can't believe like how much I didn't know about the lovers, and how much, even though I didn't know about it or really dive into it as much, I'm like, oh my God, I see it everywhere in my life. Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It seems like part of your, I don't want to like project onto you, but like maybe one of the assignments you got in life was to like really work as a Gemini, connected to like, to really explore and learn in this realm of the lovers, like towards yourself, towards a romantic relationship, towards your passions, all of those things. And maybe to kind of close out, I wonder what suggestions might you give someone who was pulling the lovers a lot? And you don't have to like speak from any tarot knowledge or anything, but from your lover wisdom that is you.
Yeah, I think that if I had like a friend of mine that was like, I know, Bianca, like this lover card, man, it seems to just be like a magnet towards me, I would suggest that they kind of look inward and see like if there are any sort of issues with the self that they need to grapple with in terms of like choice. I think is like something that I gravitate towards in regards to this card, where like choice in relation to the self, like is there some sort of decision that needs to be made within, you know, your inner thoughts, your subconscious, that you are just scared of? I would encourage my friend to just dive into that scary choice that needs to be made and just go full on with it.
I love that. I think you're ready to be a tarot reader. And I love how you, as someone who struggles to make choices, it's just like, make a choice. I think that's like so perfect.
I know, right? It's easier said than done, huh?
But often like I'll be doing a reading for someone and I'm saying, you know, I'm giving suggestions like that, or like how to kind of work with this. And I'm like, you need to listen to yourself and you need to follow your own advice,
oh
lady.
Oh my God. Literally the story of my life. Like, take your own medicine is my middle name, says.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. Bianca, thank you so, so much for coming on the show. This has been really fun and beautiful and expansive. And I'm so glad you're out in the world writing poetry and loving things and spreading some of that loving energy far and wide. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Cecily. I'm so glad that you exist. And definitely think that typewriter tarot is a like such an important aspect that you have brought to the community. I listened to the first episode between you and Anar, and talking about the Fool and how it was so hard for you to kind of make this decision of like pursuing this like passion of yours. So I'm just so glad that you did that. I think that the community here in Austin and Central Texas is just that much greater because you exist and that you have this passion. So I'm so happy to be in your world, because this is your world, Cecily. We're just living in it.
Don't please tell my boyfriend that. Well, I definitely am going to go cry now. And thank you. Thank you.
That's, no, thank you. Seriously.
That feels like a very lover moment where I feel very witnessed and seen and like supported. And I hope you get all of that as well, because your work is similarly crucial for all of us here, all of our writerly neighbors and beyond. So thank you.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Bianca for coming on the show. My heart was so full after this conversation, and I hope your heart is feeling full as well. You can find all the places where you can learn about and connect with Bianca by going to the show notes. You'll also see a link to purchase her chapbook, her beautiful chapbook of poems, Gemini Gospel, which I highly encourage you get a copy of. And in the spirit of the Lover's card, thank you so much for listening. It means a lot that there are people out there receiving these conversations and hopefully finding them helpful and supportive in your life. There's so much great stuff out there that you can listen to. So thank you for choosing your creative and magical life. It means a lot. And I don't always know. Actually, I never really know unless someone tells me that they listen to the podcast. I don't know who's listening. So if you ever want to let me know what you think or how these conversations land for you, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at hello@typewritertarot.com. And if these conversations are serving you, I encourage you to share them with your friends and the people close to you. And if you want a rating, a review would be delicious and very much appreciated. But I'm just glad you're here. It really means a lot. And if you're liking what you're hearing, I also encourage you to come join the community at Typewriter Tarot. One way to do that is just to sign up for the newsletter by going to our website. We also have a membership. We have a free creative coven that happens 8 times a year. Our next one will be June 20th for summer solstice. So there's lots of ways to come play in the Typewriter Tarot garden with us, and you are welcome. Special thanks to Chantal DeFelice for creating the music you hear throughout our episodes. And thank you to Claire Bowman for putting this episode together. And thank you to Ami Plas for creating our logo. It all makes the whole thing look and sound far more beautiful than I could make it on my own. So this is a labor of love, and it requires the help of my friends who also get paid for their work. You know, they don't do this for free, because that's whack. They gotta, you know, we should all be paid for the things we do. Anyway, thank you for being here. Have a beautiful rest of your week. I'll talk to you soon. Until next time, enjoy your creative and magical life.